Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Tuesday, the 7th of August. I've been in this business so long that I remember many, many years ago interviewing three young people who had a dream, and that was to build an outdoor classical theater somewhere in the country. And they traveled the country looking for the best spot, and they found the spot in Spring Green, Wisconsin. And thus, in 1978, the American Players Theater opened, and they are now, I can't believe it, in their 33rd season. It is, I assume everybody who's listening has been there, but if you haven't, it's a beautiful, beautiful setting. Most important, they do terrific theater, Shakespeare and other classical theater, and there are two theaters now. One is up the hill in the woods near Spring Green. It's an outdoor theater, absolutely beautiful. And now there is a Touchstone Theater that does other classical productions and modern productions. Shakespeare is always at the American Players Theater. That's why many people go there. This year, Twelfth Night, Richard III and Troilus and Cressida are on stage. And they're also having this very interesting Shakespeareans later in August. They're bringing together Shakespeare scholars to talk about Shakespeare. What better way to spend your time than to do that or to go to Spring Green? So we're absolutely delighted this hour to speak with three people who are intimately involved with the theater. Joining us, they're all in Spring Green. David Frank is producing artistic director. He has been artistic director for 21 years. I understand there have only been two artistic directors in the whole history of the theater. He has done all kinds of productions. Twelfth Night, I believe, is the one that he's doing right now. He's done Blithe Spirit, Major Barbara, Romeo and Juliet, Othello, Tartuffe, The Tempest, and many others. He has spent most of his career heading professional theater companies, 11 years as artistic director of the Studio Arena Theater in New York, and 8 years as producing director of the St. Louis Repertory Theater. He is a past chair of the theater panels of the National Endowment for the Arts and the New York State Council of the Arts. David Frank, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, our great pleasure. Sarah Young, also joining us. She is Director of Communications. She's marking her 10th season with APT, and she does the marketing strategy, community outreach, public relations. She, before coming to APT, was Director of Marketing and Development at the Madison Repertory Theater. She's a native of Iowa and now lives in Spring Green with her husband and son. She serves on the Spring Green Area Chamber of Commerce and also the Committee of For Pete's Sake, a local organization helping people in need of financial assistance. Sarah Young, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Kathleen.
And James Ridge will join us a little later. I had the great pleasure of seeing James, I don't know, about a month and a half ago in Richard III. He does a marvelous job in that. He's a terrific actor. Well, isn't it something? This has been going for 33 years now. Somebody had a dream, and look at what they built, and it's still going. That's also kind of a dream, isn't it? David?
Oh, it's been, you still pinch yourself occasionally looking back. It's still going, still growing. There's a wonderful sense now amongst the board, staff, everybody, of the kind of permanence of this organization. And what I remember when I first came here, 21 years ago, each spring you would go back and you'd be you'd just be relieved to see people coming again, because if they didn't, there was these scratchings on the side of the hill. And it could have disappeared completely. But no, it's become obviously a valued tradition for so many people. And it's been wonderful to everybody who's worked here.
Sarah, how is it that we can associate, we hope, permanence with American Players Theater? How did that happen?
Well, I think it's been a gradual growth. And in the last maybe 10, 12 years, it's really taken off. There's a period during the 90s where we almost doubled our attendance. And now, last year, we had our biggest attendance ever. It was over 113,000 people who came to the woods to see APT. And our audience is just so amazingly loyal. They're there's, I always say this, and our visiting artists say this and mean it, that they just never met audiences, never come across audiences as amazing as the APG audiences.
And the audiences come from Chicago now, too, and certainly from Milwaukee. How many people travel some distance to come to the woods?
About half of our audience. About half is from sort of a 50-mile radius right around us, and the other half comes from, like you say, the Chicago area, Milwaukee area, all around Wisconsin, and increasingly from around the country. I think we had people from 48 states last year.
Hmm. David, you've been there for 21 years. That's a long period of time. I would imagine that being at a place for so long has special significance in terms of working with a certain group of people, in terms of getting to know, you know, the constellations and the whole setting where you are. You must know the woods pretty well, too, right?
Yes, indeed. I know that stage is imprinted on my mind, that and that extraordinary Hanamichi, it's a stage unlike any other stage that you ever see, or at least see routinely. And the whole relationship, but there's a in some ways an Elizabethan feel, but also, you know, it was deeply influenced by Randy and Annie and the initial design of that space. And but as you're quite right, it has grown and grown, and that adding the second space and permanence. You know, we're unusual, I think, probably unique in the absolute commitment to having a core company of actors who've been here over a long time, that evolve a common aesthetic, a common approach to language and Shakespeare.
Mm.
And so you see relationships established between an audience. You keep running into audience members. I'm still amazed. Oh, no, I've been coming since the very beginning. I remember with porta potties and all of the now fun stories. but of course, it's happened with I think a sense of continuing purpose, that so that it happens steadily with a kind of momentum that you don't think. Oh, well, of course, the year we opened the Touchstone was a clear turning point. But for the most part, it's been steady growth with a very specific idea in mind.
And let's talk a little bit more. I haven't been to the Touchstone, I must say. I've been to ABT to see Shakespeare many times, but why a second theater?
Many reasons. One, because it is completely different from that space up the hill, so it allows you to do very different work. It allows us that the one limitation about that glorious theater outdoors is it is outdoors.
Right.
The first
yes.
week of October, our poor actors shivering. And suddenly, you know, September audiences have grown. More and more people have discovered what a glorious time it is to be here. But fall happens rapidly, and we're selling tickets like crazy through September. And suddenly you get into October, and people are in their Packers outfit now. And clearly we can't stretch the season any further, just for geographical reasons. So first and foremost, it allowed us to extend the season a little bit for the future possibility. But also, if you're a festival theater, and we are 50% a festival theater, by that I mean that people come significant distances and they arrive for a long weekend and they see multiple shows, you really do want to have a smorgasbord, a variety of things available to them. So even though that small space allows us to extend the season and potentially more in the future, we hope, and, you know, to do a Christmas show sometimes and various other things, its primary and first purpose was indeed to run simultaneously with the work up the hill, just to offer a bigger range of things. It also allowed the central core of this theater is that core company. That's the foundation of what makes the work, I think, unusually good and with a very specific approach to Shakespeare. And as they grow better and better, they also grow older, and we needed a greater variety of roles, things to offer them. It's been a chance for people to start moving from being an actor to being a director. It's a crucible for both new ideas and for also to extend the idea of classicism, that we didn't stop writing great plays in 1922 when the copyright just was
there. Right.
So to see the connection from William Shakespeare to O'Neill or Beckett or Williams and on and on and on, David here this year, is also very exciting, I think. So it's totally different, but it still can have as the core value the same fascination with language and great plays that last that we have up the hill.
And that's what happens when you go to APT. The experience lasts. It just lasts. Sarah, give us an overview of what's going on this season. There's still a lot of time left. And also, I believe this is sold out, but you're doing this wonderful Shakespeareans later in August as well, bringing in Shakespearean scholars. Start with the season. Is this how it was selected? What's on?
Sure, absolutely. We have we actually have 9 shows during the season.
Goodness,
and we
isn't that something?
Right, and we have 5 running right now. So we have 2 Shakespeare's, the Twelfth Night and Richard III, also the Royal Family. Those 3 are up the hill in the outdoor theater. And then indoors running right now, we have Heroes and Skylight. So those 5 have been open and, since June. And we're just in dress rehearsals right now and getting ready to open 4 more shows. One is The Admirable Crichton by J.M. Barrie, who wrote Peter Pan. Then Troilus and Cressida, another Shakespeare that we've never done before. Is about to open, and then those 2 are up the hill in the outdoor theater. And then in the Touchstone Theater, we have a lovely show called Shakespeare's Will, which is about Anne Hathaway, Shakespeare's wife, but not really about, it's not biographical in nature. It sort of uses Anne Hathaway as a jumping-off point, and it's that playwright's vision of what her life may have been with William Shakespeare. It's not terribly based in facts, because there actually aren't a lot of facts that we know about Anne Hathaway. And then the final show is Enacting Shakespeare, which is Jim DeVita's one-person play about how he sort of came to love Shakespeare and came to love speaking Shakespeare. We're bringing that back. That was our opening show in the Touchstone Theater. So we're bringing that back for only 12 performances.
Oh, I may have to come to that. I'd love to see that. You were going to say something, David?
Yes, at first glance you think, it's about Anne Hathaway and Shakespeare's Will. It's going to be something academic. Shakespeare's Will, it's a wonderful piece of contemporary writing, very personal. And yes, indeed, obviously the playwright was fascinated by the idea of Anne Hathaway living there by herself with children, married to this extraordinarily famous and increasingly successful man. It's not as if Shakespeare wasn't substantially recognized during his own lifetime, who'd left her, who apparently must have, to some extent, dropped by occasionally, but can't have been there very often. And that's the premise. But it takes off from there in a flight of imagination that is poetic and intense and very personal. One of the amazing things when Brenda first brought me the script, she was the one who discovered it and said, read this. And I was 3/4 of the way through thinking, we got to do it. I hadn't even finished it. what a great choice, Brenda. And I was absolutely convinced it had to be written by a woman. It's not, actually. So it's an extraordinarily sensitive man. But it's a wonderful piece. I hope people will grab an opportunity to see it.
And that's directed by Brenda DeVita, our associate artistic director, is directing that show. And it's a one-woman show, and Tracy Michelle Arnold will be in that.
Oh, yeah, that sounds marvelous. I am just astounded when you reeled off all that you're performing. That's a big body of work, isn't it?
It is big.
It is. And what about the Shakespeareans event? We don't want to say, I guess, too much about it, because I think it's sold out, but it's a terrific idea.
It is sold out, and we've when we were doing this sort of big Shakespeare season, we thought, well, how can we sort of goose this up for people who really, really love Shakespeare? And so we decided to do this three-day sort of symposium, and we've got several experts coming in to talk about the sonnets or elements of comedy and tragedy or Shakespeare's biography. And then we have our keynote speaker is Marjorie Garber, who wrote a bestseller a few years ago called Shakespeare After All and has a huge body of work about Shakespeare and about language. Since we are all Shakespeare is language-based, but we at ABT feel we're sort of especially language-based. So Dr. Garber will be coming in to give the keynote on August 24th, and then we'll have several sessions the next 2 days after that.
We're going to welcome phone calls. I'm particularly interested in hearing from those of you who make annual treks to the woods to see American Players Theater, for those of you who love classical theater, who love Shakespeare, or who love the idea of a couple people deciding to act on what their dreams were and make it a reality. And now it's to approach the point where, as David Frank says, you could almost use the word permanence when you talk about American Players Theater, which is, by all measures, a very, very good thing. Here's our phone number, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email, if you'd like to use that, is talk@wpr.org, or you can go to that Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and leave your comments there. David Frank, producing artistic director, he's been with the company for 21 years. And also Sarah Young. Sarah is the director of communications, marking her 10th season at APT, are our guests. And James Ridge, an actor with a company, will be joining us as well. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow during this time period, the author of The Fight for Home, How Parts of New Orleans Came Back, Daniel Wolfe, will be joining us. Here's our phone number. We're talking about American Players Theater, a really wonderful place and beautiful place in Spring Breen, Wisconsin. If you haven't been there, it's something that you want to make a part of your life, and many people make it a part of their lives every summer as they go to see classical theater. 800-486-8655, the number. The email is talk@wpr.org. And our first caller is Eleanor from Reedsburg. Hi, Eleanor.
Hi there.
Hi.
I thought that I would call in to compliment APT on how it has grown and expanded. I first knew of it when my husband and I moved here in 1980, and Randall Duke Kim was going around doing one-man shows to raise money, and he came to Reedsburg, to a little hotel in Reedsburg, Wisconsin, and gave a one-man show, and all the social workers and psychologists and teachers, you know, had made sure that a lot of people came and paid their money and helped get this theater launched, and it's just wonderful to see how it has grown and evolved. And I think the indoor theater was a great addition. It's a nice venue and allows for a different feel. And so I just want to compliment that theater. I'm really delighted that they're in the neighborhood.
Thank you for that call. You know, one of the things that strikes me also, I do keep running into people who are saying, I was here 33 years ago. And those are not just fans. Those are people without whom this theater wouldn't exist now.
Mm-hmm.
Those people who initially were excited by that idea, who took a risk, who gave money, who supported Randy and Annie in a preposterously, it should never have been possible.
You're absolutely right.
It takes real visionaries and real faith, and it was very much a collective community. Obviously, he was a brilliant classical actor and an extraordinary leader, and without Annie and Randy, it would never have happened. But it also took a community that was excited and intelligent and interested and passionate about the idea that he proposed.
Yeah. And let me ask you, Sarah, let's start with you. How you keep audiences, we hear, and maybe it's not even true, but you hear that people are watching a lot of television, they're doing video games, there's no young audience for classical mm-hmm. theater or for public radio or television. They all prefer to do different things. Is that true? Do you have to groom a young audience? I guess the other part of the question is, obviously, you've been able to do that because you're still going 33 years after you started.
Right. I think you do. I think we see audience members now who have brought their kids to APT, and now their kids are bringing their kids. And so we're into the third generation. And I think that's incredibly valuable for families yes. to come together, and also students who came in high school and now they're coming as adults, or they came with their school. So absolutely, you need to sort of shepherd those people through the process. But one thing about APT is it's a whole experience. It's approachable. It's accessible. It's Shakespeare, but you get it. And I think that's very attractive to people. And it's a little bit of an adventure and a little bit of a pilgrimage. And people still, even though you say, oh, yeah, people are watching TV and people aren't getting out, people like things a little bit harder. You know, the people that go to Europe, biking across Europe for their vacation, it's a little bit harder at APT, and people are really proud of themselves to have that experience.
I think Sarah touched on something that's really important, too, that there are, our audience, which is remarkably varied, you know, education, geography, all aspects of demographics. But over and over again, you see families who are aware that this is a tradition that is 2,400 years old.
Yes.
These are plays that it would be sacrilege if they were demoted to merely being academic study. And there are people who realize that this tradition, which keeps flowering even now, as you know, is terribly important. And I think that's a kind of collective understanding often in many of our audience members. Not everyone. Other people just come because they love it, and it's funny, and it's a beautiful place to spend an evening. So hopefully there is something even more important underlying this than that can get over video games.
And thank you, Eleanor, for the call. Peggy in Milwaukee, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I'm so excited about your show today. For years, my husband and I have enjoyed the plays, and we have started taking our adult daughters when they were in junior high, and now we look forward to it so much. When we get our flyer in the spring, we sit down as a family, we pick our favorite plays, and we start planning our meal weeks ahead of time. So I think that's a big part of our experience, is enjoying a meal. We grill out and bring wine, and I just wanted to tell you what my favorite play of all time was, Othello, and I have never experienced a play ending like that, and I think the audience all felt the same, because when the play ended, there was silence. It took a while for the audience to kind of snap out of it and start to applaud. So, I mean, it was that kind of experience that I just love American players for.
It's a very perceptive remark, isn't it? I'm sorry, I forget your name, whoever the caller, but it
Peggy.
Is Peggy. That the end of that play, when Othello was asked, why did you do it? He doesn't know. He doesn't say anything. There's just silence in the play, as well as amongst the audience. It is one of the most kind of staggeringly original and disturbing, and you know, in some level, deeply honest response than the way that Shakespeare could write, and you know, that few playwrights can ever have ever matched him.
Thank you so much, Peggy, for the call. And a question for you, Sarah, before we let you go, and James Ridgett joins us to be on with David. Kelly in Madison asks, does APT offer live audio description for vision-impaired audience members?
No, we don't.
We have not done that yet. We have checked into that, and we have not had request for that. We have done sign language interpreted performances, but so far we've never never done audio. We have not done audio description.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Peggy, very much for the call. Please stay on the line for those of you who are calling in. We want to thank you, Sarah, for being with us. And if you'd like to give us a website to so people can get a rundown of your many performances this summer. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, are you there, sir?
I am here.
Okay, Sarah is gone already. Thank you, Sarah, very much.
Sarah is already gone, but it's AmericanPlayers.org.
American, I'm writing this down. AmericanPlayers.org. Great. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. James Ridge is joining us now. James and David will be with us until the end of the hour. He is marking his 15th summer on the Hill. He has done a number of roles. He's currently doing one absolutely amazing, Richard III. He is good in this show about the ultimate evil. Some have said it's the ultimately evil character ever written. We'll ask him about that. He has done all kinds of work at American Players Theater. He's also worked with the Milwaukee Chamber Theater, the Renaissance Theater Works, Madison Children's Theater, Next Act Theater, Milwaukee Rep, Milwaukee Madison Rep. He lives in Spring Green, and I think he's doing another show, too. I'm just was captivated by his Richard III. James, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks.
You were really good in Richard III. You were just really good.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. And you're doing, what else are you doing this summer?
We are, we're in preview performances for a play called The Admirable Crichton.
Okay.
Written by J.M. Barrie. So we're close to having that open as well.
Yeah. Now, I read somewhere, and both of you tell me about this, that Richard III may be the most performed Shakespearean play. Is that right? Or isn't it?
I don't know.
I don't know. I know it's performed with extraordinary frequency. I wouldn't have guessed it was the most, but...
No. No, I would have thought Midsummer Night's Dream or Hamlet.
Romeo and Juliet but
who knows?
Of all the histories, I bet it's the most frequently performed.
Yeah,
maybe that was it, of all the histories. Mm-hmm. What an evil guy. I'm just wondering how the heck you got to, and we're dealing with evil, you know, so much evil the last month. It just gets you. Mm-hmm. How do you get to that kind of evil in your performance as an actor? How do you do that? And is it a hard thing to do because you would prefer to be happy and a good person?
Well, yes, certainly. Certainly that's my hope for my life. But one of the sort of secret joys of being an actor is getting to go places that we don't get to go to in our everyday life.
Right.
There was certainly a time I remember saying out loud to Jim DeVita, who directed us in this play, during rehearsal, that I said, "Well, I'm to that point where I'm at the crossroads where I have to either really go there, in which case things are going to be a little dark around my house for a while, or I'll just keep sort of pretending." And ultimately, you know, getting a shot at this kind of a role, one would prefer to really do it, but that's sort of in the building of it, in the birthing of a role, and certainly I don't walk around with that hanging over my head all the time, or even necessarily during the show. You know, the brilliance of the role, I think, it lies all in Shakespeare.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote it, and somebody who was performing the role at the RSC sent me a lovely email just to sort of touch base and say, "Isn't this hard?" But he said somebody had given him a gem of wisdom recently, which was, "Leave the witchcraft to Shakespeare." So it's really, he wrote this amazing role where, yes, we see all of the evil, but the brilliance of the play is that same person makes a personal connection with the audience and says, "I'm going to try to do this. Watch."
Mm-hmm.
And so the audience gets is behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
They're the the actor's studio of that particular evil, you know?
Yeah.
Which is compelling and seducing until the line is crossed, whatever someone's personal line is.
Yeah. What, is he, and I'm interested in both of your thoughts on this, is he the most evil character ever written?
Jim, take
David.
It.
Well, David is far better read than I am, certainly.
Oh, I doubt that's true, Jim.
Oh,
no, for sure. My opinion about the thing would be that I don't think that he is. I heard you interviewing Lee Ernst about To Kill a Mockingbird,
mm-hmm.
And Jim, John Daly, and... you know, Bob Yule in that story is...
Yes, he is.
...is pretty evil.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I think one of the things that distinguishes Richard is that he has that dialogue with the audience. I think that's part of it, to be inside the head of the person responsible while they're doing it. I think that's a unique perspective in terms of roles... that are out there.
David, what do you think?
Oh, gosh, it is, of course, hard to quantify degree of evilness. You know, it's what is fascinating about, I am speechless in response to your question, not knowing how to begin. But one of the things that is both exciting as well of Richard and Jim's performance of it, just masters it, is the sheer until finally the poor guy just collapses under the weight. And I think I think Jim Ridge, when you see him in the final scenes, will make the case that perhaps he's not the most evil person ever, because you do see the pain and conscience emerge.
Mm.
But for a while, the thrill of it, I think, for an audience, is the delight he takes. And you think that's bad? Look about this one.
Mm-hmm.
And so the play is actually quite funny in a horrific way. I don't know whether to say, you know, whether he certainly is up there. I mean, Edmund is pretty nasty in Lear, and everyone
Iago.
Will find Iago right. is perhaps... Yeah, you're right, Jim. I mean, maybe he is the quintessence of evil, because he never does. That's it. You have the difference.
Yeah.
Othello
never, I mean, Iago never does say, I'm sorry.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. Let's take some phone calls. We have a number of lines going, 800-486-8655. George is calling us from Greensboro, North Carolina. Hi, George.
Hello there. We're Hi. Actually on our way back to Greensboro in the car.
Oh, thanks for calling.
It's a 2,500-mile trek, and we stumbled upon the theater last week.
Huh.
Saw a delightful performance of Twelfth Night. I just wanted to say that we actually expected a kind of flocky wind across the corn local performance, and we were astonished by the setting and by the quality of the play. And it took me back to the 60s when I did a little Shakespeare in college and was sure I was going to do that for a living, but life went different directions.
Mm-hmm.
I want to thank you for the beauty of the place, and we've discovered a new destination for future vacations.
Wonderful. Yeah,
what
it's
a lovely phone call.
Mm-hmm. What a lovely. Now, didn't you direct Twelfth Night?
I did, yes.
I thought so, David. Yeah. And do you like? Is that one of your favorite plays? Or
oh yes, you
it
know,
is.
People keep asking you, what's your favorite Shakespeare?
Right.
You the one of, you know, I don't know, 15 comes into mind, and you grab it, and then you feel that you've been unfair to the rest of your children. Oh, it was that Tracy Arnold who nailed that one, saying, "Well, tell me what's your favorite child." You know,
right.
but Twelfth Night is one of the great, great comedies, you know, of those three. Oh, then you say, well, what about As You Like It? What about Much Ado? But I love it.
Yeah.
Just love it.
Sarah used this phrase, Jim, in the first half hour talking about Shakespeare, but you get it. And I'm wondering, how do you make people get it? Because that is what happens.
Well, I think it's a combination of it's what David has laid down as the foundation of the theater, is the a chasing after the technique of dealing with the rhetoric that Shakespeare writes. So breaking down the ideas into bite-sized chunks, but not small enough that they don't still, as a vessel, hold the entire idea. So that we're constantly wrestling with just the pure technique of that, but then trying to marry that with what it is that we are chasing after in this generation of actors, which is to try to be a real person, a living, breathing person with the need to express those ideas spontaneously and full of all of the range of human passion that would reflect a life, a real life, back to the audience.
Mm-hmm. David, your response to that?
Oh, well, Jim has just put it wonderfully, and there's some images there I'm going to steal and pretend were mine. but it is what you get. Technique is the tool, and without that tool, you don't get freedom and credibility and spontaneity. So it's that relationship. If technique becomes the goal, it's not worth it. Mm-hmm. But if it becomes a tool that and it is. People have no idea how hard it is until they are on that hill trying to speak to 1,150 people in, you know, a 15-knot breeze with the cicadas going. And they can, and they do it, and it is a wonderful kind of huge, big public event. But it has to be founded on technique. But technique is not the goal. Technique is, you know, through rigor and discipline comes freedom. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the final ultimate skill in verse speaking, we would say, is being what we call on the moment, mm-hmm. meaning that it is slightly different every time, that it's the idea itself, not the symptoms of the idea. And so the irony, the paradox that Shakespeare would have loved, is you have to be technically highly proficient in order to release, in order to make it spontaneous and exciting, mm-hmm. and fresh and immediate.
Right. People are very skilled. You're all very skilled. Richard in Madison, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Fine, Richard. How are you?
Good. I started the Barrymore Theater about 25 years ago, so I'm the new kid on the block. And I just wanted to relate that... First of all, I'm happy about your new indoor theater, and wanted to relate that APT performed at the Barrymore quite a long time ago for a winter fundraiser that was just great and sold out. But it was I just wanted to congratulate you and also say that my favorite performance was Midsummer Night's Dream on a very cold night. Where you could see the breath of all the performers, and it was just incredibly magical. So I just want to congratulate you on your 33 years.
And we should congratulate you on the Barrymore Theater, too, which is an awfully important resource for Madison. I have been there many, many times.
Thank you, Richard, for your call. Andrea in Beaver Dam, hi.
Hi. I first wanted to just thank you for doing this program. When I was in high school, we would go to the APT as a field trip every year. And earlier in the show, Sarah referred to the experience of going to the APT as a pilgrimage, and I can certainly relate because I remember being dressed in khakis and polos and trudging up that hill in the heat. But our first show that we saw was Pygmalion, and after that I was hooked.
What a lovely phone call.
That's great.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Yeah. Now, you live, Jim, in Spring Green, don't you?
I do, yes.
Yeah. How's that? It's such a beautiful place.
It is a beautiful place. It's a great place to raise kids. It's a little bit like being in Mayberry with a great deal of culture thrown into,
mm-hmm.
into that mix. So it's mm-hmm. There's music going on. There's all kinds of artistry in lots of different forms. And, yeah, we love it here.
Hmm. And David, are you there all year? Or?
I'm here all year. We live almost opposite Jim Rich, not quite.
Really?
Both of us in downtown metropolitan Spring Green. Jim puts his finger on it. It is a mixture of three glorious things. It is a wonderful rural village with everything, you know, that you might find in similar villages, although Spring Green is a particularly magnificent example of it, scattered across the state and across this nation. It is also charming and not too crowded center for visitors, with lots of little fascinating shops and always growing, so people kind of discover it with delight. And then thirdly, mixed into this, it's quite a significant artist community. You know, there, as Jim said, there are everything from Taliesin. There's a new mime school that's just started here that we do performances.
Huh.
It has a long, long history, and then obviously APT with its two theaters. So people, artists live here, painters live here. It is an amazingly cosmopolitan, varied little village that still has as its underpinnings just an unpretentious, straightforward, open-hearted rural community.
Mm.
We love it. We love it. We'll miss it terribly if we ever have to leave.
Mm. Open-hearted, that's a place to live. More phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the American Players Theater this hour of the show. They're in their 33rd season. Hooray for them. We have two guests with us. James Ridge is an actor with the American Players Theater, and he does one whale of a Richard III at the theater this summer. He's doing other shows as well. I just saw that one, so I wanted to thank him for the performance. David Frank is producing artistic director, has been there for 21 years. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Ray from Copper Harbor, Michigan, our next caller. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
Hi.
Can you hear me? I'm on a cell phone way on the top of the world here.
We hear you.
Okay. I was involved with American Players Theater in the earlier part of its infantile stage, and it's amazing how it has grown through the years. Back in the early 80s when we were volunteering and people were getting things, you know, structured and making connections and getting things going, and it was just an amazing time. And to see how it has evolved worldwide, and no matter where you go, you can mention it literally and people have heard of it. That's the amazing part of it. I've traveled all over. When I mention it, they go, of course, we've been there. We've heard about that. That's that place in that unique area in southwestern Wisconsin. Some people call it fairyland. They call it this and that. They call it all these amazing things. But of all the plays I've seen and the ones that I've talked to people, the first time when they did Midsummer Night's Dream there, it was amazing. It was amazing. So, happy anniversary, and I enjoyed my volunteering there and living in the area, and I hope there's many more years, and there's been many fine people that have come through there and many connections, and it is a wonderful part of the world there. So everybody keep it up and cool's the rule and have a good time.
That's another founder we are speaking to.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Ray, very much for the call. What is it like? I know there's a core group of actors, and you've been there, for both of you, for a long period of time. You would think that either that's a wonderful thing because you love your neighbors and you're all open-hearted and you get along, but it could also be a cloying thing. How do you keep friendships and flourishing and learning new things about each other in a fairly small area and over a long period of time?
Jim, do you want to take that? Well, this is my 15th year in the company, and partly, you know, we those of us in the acting company anyway, you know, we're here from May to the beginning of October, and then we're off working other places, and it's a little bit like having a forced sabbatical every year.
Hmm.
For us, we go out and we work other places, and really, to a person, if you were to survey the core company, at least, those experiences, they just make it that much more thrilling to come back here, where there's, it's a, I don't know, some sort of magical blend of everybody here agreeing to keep the bar really high, people agreeing that they will continue to chase after something that is not perfectible. So we support and challenge each other. And it's the dramaturgy. So there are these incredible plays that we get to keep plying these tools against. And it's a constant challenge and delight. So our joy just gets renewed every spring. Everybody loves coming back out here.
Oh, it must be a wonderful reunion. Flora in Cudahy, hi.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. I first went to APT in 1997. It was a surprise birthday present for my dearest friend. I had no idea where we were going. We saw Cyrano de Bergerac, and I was hooked. It was so magical. And I looked at my weekends, either in the summer or in the fall, and being there, you know, on a cold fall night, wrapped up in a blanket, drinking hot tea, and watching an incredible play is an incredible way to spend a weekend. But I also had wanted to say that we love James Ridge. And it's been a while now since he did Dickens in America. And I missed that at APT. I wasn't able to get there. And I missed him when he was here in Milwaukee. But a few years later, some friends and I went out for coffee. And one of the guys had seen it. And I was like, oh, wow, he loves theater. And that sparked my interest in him. And we're now married and looking forward to seeing James in Richard III, not this Saturday, but the following Saturday.
Oh, it just it keeps getting better. Thank you so much, Flora.
The APT dating service.
Yeah, exactly. You should advertise that way. You'll be sold out every night. Thanks, Flora. Mark in Coon Valley, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I was wondering how your, this is for both guests, how your approach to Shakespeare has changed over the years. My wife and I have been attending plays since 87. And it seems that Shakespeare today at APT is played more broadly for laughs than it was when we first got there.
David.
Well, I wasn't here in 87, so I can't speak directly to that. There certainly has been a change. I wouldn't have thought that we certainly wouldn't say to ourselves we're playing it more broadly for laughs. We do now, we hopefully do a certain amount of cutting. It's fairly minimal. It's not the kind of broad cutting. And, of course, that depends on the play, too. You know, some plays require more than others. I would like to think that we have continuously pursued technique and that we've invested more and more in it. So maybe sometimes, oddly, if you get the technical aspects of it better, you get a cleaner laugh out of it. Certainly, I don't think there's anything consciously that says that we have become more broadly in pursuit of laughter. Not that I am aware of. I do like to think that we have this kind of long, gradual improvement as you just keep working away to try to get better.
Thank you for the call. An email has come in from Mary in Madison. How handicapped accessible are the theaters?
We are in the both theaters are handicapped accessible. It's something we take seriously. Obviously, up the hill poses natural problems, including a rather steep hill. It's good to call the box office ahead of time to discuss what handicaps we're dealing with, and we will really go out of our way to try to accommodate those needs. We have, of course, a shuttle bus that goes up the hill. We have wheelchair accessible seating, really good seating, wheelchair accessible. I would urge, because there's a hill and because it takes time, to give us a call ahead of time and pre-warn us that you'd like a wheelchair seat, if that's what it is. But we are eager to work with whatever the needs are.
All right. We have about 30 seconds left, but I think a special thank you from Paul in La Crosse. Hi, Paul.
Hi. I just wanted to express my gratitude to APT for making my honeymoon so special 17 years ago. We watched, I'll let you guess what Shakespeare play we watched, and it was not Taming of the Shrew.
All right, Paul, what was it?
It was Romeo and Juliet.
I am wonderful. Delighted.
And on that note, we thank you. Thank you both so much. I'll have to get out there again this year at a great time. Thank you for keeping it alive.
Thank you, Kathleen.
Our thanks to David Frank, producing artistic director. Thanks earlier to Sarah Young, director of communications. And thanks to James Ridge, longtime actor with American Players Theater. And thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers, who produced this program, for all of your calls. We thank you as well. And I tell you to go to our Facebook page because information gets generated from our programs. And in case you miss, I want to go to APT, any more information, we'll post all of this on our Facebook page, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Great conversations ahead. Please stay with us. And I'll be with you again tomorrow at 9 o'clock.